Welcome to Trial Lawyer Review, a podcast for and about trial lawyers. We will tell the stories about trial lawyers who go to battle every day in courtrooms throughout the United States for injury victims. This is about their stories and their practices. Hello, everyone. I'm Jason Lazarus, your host for Trial Lawyer Review. Thank you for tuning in today for another episode. Trial Lawyer Review is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. In full disclosure, I'm not a professional podcaster. Instead, my day job is Chief Executive Officer of Synergy Settlement Services. Synergy allows trial lawyers to focus on what they do best by handling the difficult issues that arise at settlement, like troublesome lien resolution issues, Medicare secondary payer compliance, government benefit preservation techniques, and complex settlement planning.
Joining me today, I'm Ken Hardison. He's a seasoned trial lawyer and of counsel with Hardison & Cochran in Raleigh, North Carolina. His law practice focuses on representing those who have suffered catastrophic personal injuries. He's been recognized in AJ's Top 100 Trial Lawyers, 2021 Best Law Firm U.S. News, Mass Tort Trial Lawyers Top 25, Million Dollar Advocates Forum, and recognized by Best Lawyers in 2021. He's got over 30 years legal experience and has personally grown and sold 2 7-figure law firms. He's the author of numerous best-selling books such as Systematic Marketing, Under Promise, Over Deliver, and his latest book, Powerful Online Legal Marketing. And if that's not enough, he's also the founder of Powerful Innovative Legal Marketing and Management Association, known as PILMA. He is the host of the Grow Your Law Firm podcast and recently had me on as a guest. And I thought he would be a great guest on Trial Lawyer Review to help give his views and thoughts on building law firms and marketing, because he is certainly a recognized guru in that. So welcome, Ken.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Before we get too much into the law side, I know from our past conversation that you're a pretty avid golfer and you love being on the water, that you're an avid fisherman. What is it about those? Is that kind of an escape for you to get away from the rigors of the practice of law in the business world?
Yeah, I think the golf side is the competitiveness in me. Because it's something I have never mastered, and I don't think I ever will. But I never give up, and the being around the water and fishing is very calming to me. So yeah, it's one thing about the golf course too. You know, I usually cut my phone off, so I got like 4 hours where I don't have anybody pinging me, and I can just concentrate on something else. And I do some of my best thinking on the beach. I really do. Some of my best ideas are either in the shower or on the beach.
Yeah, you know, it's so rare that we get a break these days from the barrage of emails, Teams messages, text messages, all that LinkedIn notifications. So I'm a cyclist, and I love the solitude of that. I don't look at my phone, can't, and I really don't think about much of anything while it's really hard. And then when it gets a little easier, sometimes you can think through some problems. And grew up surfing too, and still surf, and I love being out on the water. I mean, there is some serenity and calm, especially when you paddle out first thing in the morning when sun is coming up, and it's such a beautiful thing to be out on the water. And that to me is incredibly calming. Love that. So, curious, what was the single biggest reason for you making the practice of law your career and ultimately becoming a trial lawyer?
Okay. Well, I was raised really poor, and I saw my dad got taken advantage of several times. And I've seen other people that just didn't have the money or the know-how and really got taken advantage of by banks and corporations, car dealerships, different things. And I just said, you know, I knew two things. I wanted to help people, and I wanted to have my own business. I didn't want to work for somebody the rest of my life. And I think that was it. I mean, I think that was the big deal. I mean, I toyed about being a CPA, but I took some courses in college, and I said, this is not for me. I mean, I like numbers, but pretty boring work. I mean, I hate to say it, but for me it is anyway. I like a little bit more action going on.
Well, you're not alone in terms of the desire to help people. That seems to be a pretty common theme of all the trial lawyers I've talked to, is that desire. And I know for me, that was really what drove me in getting into what I do today and becoming a lawyer in the first place. It's really kind of a privilege and an honor that we get to be part of, helping someone through something that typically is pretty life-changing for them. And, in some instances, permanent disability as a result. So it's a pretty big responsibility we have in helping those people, and take that very seriously, but do love that I'm in a business today where we get to help people every day and be part of working with trial lawyers to hopefully make that person's life a little bit better after they've suffered that injury. In doing my research for the podcast, I came across you talking a bit about the idea of practicing law versus being in the law business. And having worked with a lot of law firms over the last 20 years, I think that that's a pretty interesting concept, because the idea of looking at ROI and how you market and your systems and processes, how you hire, how you manage staff, the case management you use, cash flow in the law firm, KPIs, all of that stuff, the business of law. I know there was nothing that I got in law school about that. I'm just curious about how you became a student of that and what you feel are the single most important things for law firms to be focused on as they're growing their practices as it relates to those kinds of issues.
Yeah, I think, the first 10 or 12 years, I was just doing like everybody else, and I was working myself to death and working 60, 80 hour weeks. And I was making a really good living. I'm not going to lie about it, but it was killing me in the process. And I don't know, I just felt like there was a better way. And so I read this book called, who was it by? It was called E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And the deal is, and so I've had a lot of these conversations with lawyers, it's a profession, it's not a business. Well, it is a profession, and an honorable profession, and I'm proud of it, and I cherish my license, and I cherish my ability to help people. But it's also a business, because you've got families to feed, and you got your own family to feed and look after your kids and your whatever, whoever your loved ones is, whatever, whoever it might be. So the deal is, you got to decide, if you own your law firm, you got to do what you have a passion for or what your strengths are. And I would tell somebody out there, listen, the way I did it, it's not the ideal for everybody, but the deal is, you either got to find somebody that can run it like a business for you and let you go try your cases and be a technician and go help people, or either you got to work more on the business, which means you got to develop these processes, procedures, or get people and train and look at and figure out how to run it like a business. I'm not saying you've got to be the one to do it, but you've got to have somebody to do it. I still tried cases up to probably the last maybe 3 years before I sold out first time. And because I really did hate to give it up, but the deal was, my job as part of being a leader was I had to start seeing the future, the big picture, and helping other people create leaders in the firm, because we got bigger and bigger and bigger. We went like from 5 years, I went from like two lawyers, three staff, to like 13 lawyers, 47 staff. And when you have that much growth, you've got to have some leaders involved. But I would tell lawyers, that's the big deal. Decide, what you want to do. You want the law firm to work for you. You not work for it. Okay. If you got to work for the law firm, you might as well just go get a job working for some big litigation firm. And you'll probably make just as much money if you're not a good business person, don't care about it, and probably have a lot less headaches because you don't have to take it home with you, But I love owning my own business. And, I knew that from a young age that I did not want to work for somebody else the rest of my life. Cause I started working when I was 10 years old. I grew up very poor and just always had to work. And I just, you know, I didn't mind working for other people, but I'd rather be the boss, you know.
Well, it's great advice, you know, surrounding yourself with great people who also maybe have skill sets that you don't have. It is incredibly important. I mean, I found that, you know, in synergy that, you know, you could be the greatest person in terms of settlement services, you yourself, but you also need those people around you who do the things that you don't want to do. Finance and accounting, you know, making sure customer service is up to par, making sure that the culture is maintained and that people know the purpose of the company and what you're striving to deliver to the clients you work with. I mean, all of that is so essential. And it you know, there's nothing that really teaches you all that. You find it out through a process of trial and error. So it's great that you give other lawyers that kind of framework and background so that they can implement that in their practices.
Yeah. No, I enjoy it. I mean, like I said, I mean, you got to figure out what your strengths are and what you have a passion for. I mean, that's just the way the world works. And like I know how to do management, but I hate management. So I've always really hired really good managers. And I know nothing about technology. So I always hired really good technology people. And I'll be honest with you, I want the best trial lawyer. I'd say I was a B plus. I tried probably 150 jury cases, but I was no F. Lee Bailey, Lanier or somebody like that hitting multi-billion dollar verdicts. I thought I was pretty good in mediation. But I really felt like my big strength was I was a good leader and I was a good visionary and I could see the big picture. And I love coaching people up and mentoring lawyers. And so I tend to gravitate towards that. That's what made me happy, because that's what life's about, being happy. I mean, money itself is not going to make you happy. Money gives you the freedom to do things that do make you happy. But money itself does not make you happy. I learned that. Probably later than I should have in life, because like I said, I told you on my podcast, I don't make near the money I made when I practiced law. But my stress level is about 98% less, and I really love what I do. I love helping lawyers. I can talk this stuff, marketing management, all day long. I mean, I read books on it all the time. I just read a book this weekend, John Maxwell, The 5 Levels of Leadership. And I just thought, you know, I wish I'd read that 30 years ago, or had something like that. I mean, I could have grew a lot faster than I did. But running a business is not for everyone. But if you got a business, if you got a law firm and you own it, you need to run it like a business, and you can still be a profession and have honor. I mean, I did a lot of marketing, but I never did the stuff that, and I did a lot of PI work, but I never did the stuff with the big checks. And it works. Let me say this. I have no problem with people doing it. I did more of an educational-based marketing because I felt like that got me the type of clients I wanted, which were clients that weren't greedy, but really were more about wanting justice or wanting not to get screwed over. You know what I'm saying? They didn't know. It's like those people I was talking about when I was young. They weren't really out to get something for nothing, but they just didn't want to get taken advantage of, and they didn't know how to deal with it. That was the type of clients I always was looking for, because they were the best type of clients. You could all most of the time fulfill their expectations, because they didn't have unrealistic ones. And so that was kind of my deal, and I probably could have signed up a lot more cases if I'd got up, you know, and hollered and shouted and held up the big checks and all that, because that does work. Just not my style, you know. I just didn't feel comfortable with it, but I've got a lot of PILMA members that do that, and they're very successful, you know, and it don't bother them, and I'm good with it. I don't judge. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You got to do what you I look at it this way. Until you start paying my bills, I really don't care what you think about what I do. you know, because I got to do what I feel comfortable with, even though I wouldn't do it. You know, I don't judge people, you know. I think every man's got his own way.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard you talk about doing some research on all this for the podcast. I heard you talk about going from 20 cases a month to 120 cases a month in 60 days by going on TV, and how your law firm went from two lawyers and three staff in 1996 to 6 years later, 13 lawyers and 47 staff. What drove that kind of growth, and how did you manage it all?
Yeah, well, I didn't do a very good job start with, because when that happened, I mean, we almost imploded because we couldn't handle it. I mean, you go from 20 to 120, you're going to start getting a lot of complaints. And so we had to shut off the TV for a couple months, hire some people, train some people. I had to get another manager in. But I think the deal was, when I did it, the market wasn't saturated, and we were really, I think we had core values back then when lawyers didn't know what that I was even talking about. We set it up like a business. We ran it. I had an office manager. We had systems in place after that first year, because I mean, we had to. And so I had the good fortune of bringing in a guy that was retired IBM, Dave Favor, and before him, I had another lady, Cheryl Leon, and she was really good on systems. He was good on management, and they really coached me up and really gave me a lot of support, a lot smarter than I was. And I think that had a lot to do with it. And another thing is, I just very, as I said before, very competitive. And I just went for the, I mean, I poured all my money. I just took enough to live, a small salary. I poured all the profits back in it for like 5 years in a row. And so when you do that, you know, I was looking at the big picture. We just had some exponential growth, and we did really good client service. We got a lot of referrals. We did a good quality work. We won a mill, even though we were doing a volume. We treated every case like it was going to trial. Probably my net wasn't as good as some lawyers, because we probably had more staff per, less clients per staff person and lawyer. And we did a lot, probably extra work up front, but I felt like in the long run, and I think it's what I said, under promise and over deliver in my book, I think it made a difference in the end that we, even though at the end of it, when I sold it, we were spending $2 million a year on advertising, we were still getting over 40% of our cases were from old clients, which is remarkable. It's not remarkable if it's the only way you get your business, but when you're spending $2 million and you still get 40% of your business from referral small clients, that says a lot.
Yeah, so you mentioned two things I wanted to drill down on a little bit. You mentioned core values, and that sort of strikes a note with me, because, you know, our business and culture really is all driven by our corporate values, which are professionalism, respect, integrity, dedication, empathy, which, you know, dealing with who we deal with and what we have to deal with, I always felt like having that strong backbone was really important. I did notice on the Pilma website that you guys had your core values resuscitated. I've really not seen that too much in a law practice. I'm curious, you know, how you use that in your practice. And you kind of mentioned that sort of fueled your growth to some extent.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they're so important, because if you use them the way you're supposed to, that's your non-negotiables. I mean, your core values. And Dave Favor, the guy from IBM, I was saying, he's taught me this, and I'll never forget it. It's been, my gosh, 30 years ago. He said, Hitler had core values. I said, hell, I said, he was a beast. He said, no, he was non-negotiable. He believed what he believed, and everything he did surrounded itself for that core value. Even though it might be a bad one, he had one. And so it's whatever yours are, they can be good or bad. Ours was, and so what you want to do is you want to hire people that align, their core values align with your firm's, and your firm's going to be your core values, really. I mean, really. You know, because it's like culture, you got it, whether you create it or not. Excuse me. You've got a culture. So I think it's like the guiding light. I mean, if you know what your core values are, anybody in the firm, if they got a decision to make, all they have to do is go back to your core values. Is this aligned? What my decision needs to align with my core values? And then the people you hire, they need to align with your values, need to align with your core values. You know, and then it permeates everything you do from the opening of the file to the client service, to the closing the file, to how you settle the case, how you try the case, the client service. I mean, yeah, I had it in both of my law firms that I started. And, client service was a big one. I mean, yeah, we had one that said, we live by the golden rule. We treat people the way we want to be treated. I mean, that was my first one, been my first law firm. Pilma's are a little different. I actually had help with those from our staff. I wanted them to be involved in it. And so we did a retreat and worked on that. And worked out good.
So drilling down again on what you were talking about the growth, and you're spending a lot of money on advertising, and I'm assuming it was part of a broader marketing effort. I know from what you said, you sold the law firm in 2010, and that you were doing a lot of different things, and some cost a lot of money, some didn't cost a lot of money. What did you figure out were the top three most effective marketing strategies from that experience, and how would that help other law firms that are trying to scale up?
Yeah. So most lawyers can't afford TV, and I tell most of my people that come to me, if you can't get in the top three in your market, don't spend the money. So that's always going to be number one, for at least for the foreseeable future, even though it's getting saturated. Internet, I would say, would be number one. Number two would be getting referrals from past clients. And there's so many things you can do to do that. I've taught whole webinars on nothing but just how to get referrals from clients, how to get referrals from doctors, how to get referrals from other lawyers. I mean, there's three different ways to get referrals. I found that the ones from your past clients I like the best, because you don't have to pay a referral fee, and they're not expecting quid pro quo like the doctors are, which is unethical and you can't do anyway. You're not supposed to. And you don't have to share your fee with them. And, you know, and then I guess, TV, internet, then referrals. And the internet's got four or five facets. You got LSA ads, which most lawyers don't even know about yet, but local service ads. You got the Google, the maps, which is the Google Local. You got the PPC, PPP, pay-per-click, and then you got SEO. So you've got, you know, four or five different ways to get on there, and that's just with Google. That's not talking about Bing or Yahoo or the other ones. But you know, and then fourth, if you take out TV, I would say videos would mix in with social media. Not just social media per se, but videos. And I'm not talking about high production. I'm talking about using your cell phone. That's all you got to do. I mean, if you got a good quality iPhone or Android that's got a good camera on it, HD camera, buy you a $50 mic, stick it in there, get you a $15 tripod, and just get in some good lights, you can knock it out, you know. But knowing how to do it's the big deal, right? I mean, anybody could do it, but then you got, and that's some of the stuff we teach at Pilma, is how to get on the first page of Google, how to keep your ROI down. You know, I preach that if you, every dollar you spend on marketing, you should get $6 back, or don't you need to either fix it or either quit it, you know, within like the first 90 days, 6 months, and then just have an infrastructure. I mean, here's the three barriers of growth. Number one is leadership, which is people. You got to have, you know, no great business of any kind was ever built on the back of just average people. You got to have good leaders. You need a leader for about every, not a manager, but a leader for about every eight people in your business. you know, and then you got to have a good infrastructure, which is processes, systems, you know, and then lastly, of course, you got to have effective marketing. And that's where most lawyers really fail, because they just throw something out there, think people are going to come, and that's not the truth. You've got to stand out from the competition. You got to figure out what it is. You got to answer two questions. The first question is, do I need a lawyer? The second question is, why should I pick you over all the other law firms out there? And if you can't answer those two questions with your marketing, then you're wasting probably 50% of your budget. And then you got to know where to go. You got to send it to the right people. I mean, you know, saw this lawyer trying to get hip replacement cases, you know, for his steel rods and things. And he spent $100,000 in this market. And he couldn't get no case. He couldn't understand. Well, that product, that company never sold them in North Carolina. So he wasted the money. He didn't do his research. He was marketing to the wrong people, right? He was in the wrong state. Same thing. I mean, you know, if you plan to get a bunch of workers' comp cases, I don't think you're going to get it at the country club. You know, you're going to have to go. You have to be going to where the people are that work in the factories, you know. And put your message to where they go, where they eat, you know, where they eat, where they, what radio they listen to, what TV programs they watch, you know, what do they read, what kind of social media do they look at, you know, depends on what age you're going from, you know, you really got to look at who your ideal client is, and then figure out how can I get to that, get my message to, in front of that person, and then answer those two questions, you know. And then you got to do a great job once you get the case, you know. And then the last thing is what 90% of lawyers forget is, and I think that's why we were so effective in growing so fast, is people are so worried about trying to convince people that don't know them to hire them that they forget about getting referrals from the people that know them, like them, love them, and trust them, and creating systems and processes to get those people to refer you new cases. Because referrals, what I've found over the years, are the better cases, and the people that are referred to you, you don't have to sell them, or you don't have to convince them anything. They've already been sold by whoever referred them. You know, it's, and that's in any business. That's just not legal. That's, somebody refers a lawyer to you to do your work, it's easy. It's just a matter, all they want to know is how much it costs and when can we start. But if they're coming in cold off the website or off a direct mail piece, they got 100,000 questions, and not, you know, I would think, I don't know, but I would think that the way it would be. But yeah.
I mean, for us, for sure, you know, I mean, having another trial lawyer say, hey, you know, you're having a problem with an ERISA lien, then you need to call Synergy. They did a great job for me. That's obviously for us the number one way that we derive business is that word of mouth marketing from someone that's worked with us and you know, testimonials and all that good stuff. And I'm a, you know, pretty avid student of the marketing side and heavily involved with our brand. So I mean, we've talked a little bit already about the marketing stuff, and I know you're kind of referred to as a millionaire maker in terms of helping law firms double, triple what they are doing through PILMA. Can you talk, because we really haven't talked about this, what is PILMA, just so that the listeners understand better what that is?
Well, it's basically a organization, association. Used to be personal injury, and then we had other lawyers come in. I changed it. I'm thinking about changing it back to Personal Injury Legal Marketing and Management Association. But so basically, I mean, our tagline is we help grow law firms, and we do it through educational. And so we have a monthly magazine that goes out to each member. We have a listserv where people get on there and talk to each other and ask about vendors, you know, to say, how about Synergy? Anybody use Synergy? I've got this lien stuff, you know, or they refer cases to each other. Then we have a monthly intake training, because I found that this is another place where most lawyers really fail at, although they don't want to admit it, is that they're probably losing 20 to 30% of the business they could be getting just by not training their people and doing some really good work on intake and holding people accountable of getting cases signed up. And then we also do a, We do a couple webinars a month. Like I'm doing one this week on how to set up your intake center, intake personnel, how to hire them, how to train them, what equipment you need. And I show them that if you could just hire one person, pay them like $30,000, $40,000 a year, they're going to help you sign up at least one to two more cases a month. So it's not an expense. It's going to triple. Their investment's going to triple, quadruple by having that one person that's dedicated and knows how to convert and knows how to close somebody on the phone, or either get them into the lawyer and warm them up and let the lawyer do the close. And then we also, I'm trying to think of everything we do. I do a monthly Q&A where they can come in and ask me questions. We do a monthly roundtable session with just the marketing assistants and directors of law firms. Then we have another roundtable with just the management people. And we do that every month. And I know we got some other features. We also put on events. We do a big super summit. We're doing that. We have 400 or 500 lawyers come across the country, well, from Australia, Canada, across the country. And it's like 3.5 days. We got like 40 speakers, half of them are lawyers, and they're sharing their secrets. Also do internet boot camp once a year. We just did that. And then I have a second deal, which is the mastermind, which I'm the proudest of. And then we got a bunch of training modules inside. We got a member login, and I got all these past webinars and training sessions, you know, step-by-step process of what you need to do. Grab the low-hanging fruit. This is what you need to do next. Man, kind of like a roadmap. And then we have another membership level called Masterminds. And actually, in Masterminds, I have three levels of Masterminds for lawyers doing under 2 million, lawyers doing 2 to 10 million, and then lawyers doing over 10 million. Because believe it or not, even the guys that are doing over 10 million, they still want to get bigger. And plus, they got a lot of different problems than the lawyers that are doing 0 to 2 million. They got a lot more management problems, much more. If they're doing over 10 million, they figured out how to market usually. They just don't know how to handle, you know, hiring, firing, managing KPIs. You know, how can I get, you know, you would think that the costs, your margins would go up. But really, when you get bigger, they can go down because of the complexity and waste, you know, not having things streamlined. So, you know, that's my favorite one. And that one, we meet, have roundtables in live every 3 or 4 months. And then we have monthly Zoom meetings. I bring in speakers. I do some teachings. And then they get all the other regular PIMA membership deals, and we
sounds like it's a lot of thought leadership, business development, just targeted and marketing targeted at law firms. I'm curious because, you know, you talked about something that I was going to ask you about, which were the top three things that hinder law firms from growing. But maybe we flip that around. What are three things that law firms probably aren't doing today that can help them grow?
Okay. Well, number one is getting the right message. And then number two is everybody, I don't do it now. I used to do a lot of consulting, like fly out to somebody's law firm, spend 2 or 3 days and do a, you know, but every law firm I ever went to, I would do like 4 or 5 ghost calls where I would record, I would get somebody to call or record at like a new potential new client. And every law firm I ever went to in the last 10 years, nobody got over 3 out of 5 of them right. So that's telling me, I mean, in 10 years, 60% was the best they did. And I let them listen. And they said, oh, we sign up every case we want. And I let them listen to their staff, and they would get physically sick. And that's why we do the monthly training, intake trainings. Now I got this lady, she called her the phone sales doctor, Chris Mullen. She's me and her wrote a book together. That's another one of our books on how to convert new callers into clients. And I wrote a book with her. I thought she was so good. And she does our training because I think she's probably better at it than I am. But there's always leakage. That's where I can always go in there and make lawyers more money just by tweaking that, showing them how to train them and, you know, and holding them accountable and role playing and just, different things for different law firms. And then probably the third thing is really if they would hire the right people instead of just being reactionary, be more proactive and take your time hiring people and really try to get A players, and which that's a big challenge right now because nobody wants to work. But if you can find an A or A plus player, even if you got to pay them 50% more than going market, hire them, because here's the deal. They're going to work three times, put out three times more work than the average B player. And so even though, you see what I'm saying? So you can pay one and a half times, but you'll get three times as much. So you're still great ROI. And this is not me just thinking this. This is studies have been done on this. I'm also a certified scaling up coach with Vern Harnish, Scaling Up and the Rockefeller Habits. And they've done studies. I mean, you know, he preaches this, you know, and what the cost of a bad hire could be. And then when you get them, you know, you gotta keep them and doing the things. And I don't have time today to talk about it, but there's a lot of things you can do to keep them. I will say this, money is not the number one reason people quit. Not feeling appreciated and not being affirmed, the top two, and then along with they hate their boss, their immediate boss is an ass, basically, you know, whoever it might be. So, yeah, I mean, but there's ways to do that. I mean, there's books and books and books on, you know, and you want team players, you know. I would suggest everybody out there read The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Pat Lencioni.
Yeah, Lencioni's great.
Yeah, I would really put that. That's an eye-opening book that I get all my staff to read it, too. I really would.
Yeah, Ideal Team Player is an excellent book, and I'm very heavily involved in our culture here because, you know, it again, being a mission-based business, I want to make sure that we are finding people that are passionate about helping other people because that's what we do. And like you've talked about, all those things you've talked about, creating systems to support people so that they, you know, find synergy to be the best place to work, make it, you know, it's still work, right? So, you know, obviously that's just doesn't go away, but, you know, making sure that people have what they need, get the support they need, get the recognition that they need and crave are important aspects to me of making sure that we provide for our immediate family as much as we provide for, you know, all those that we serve, you know, because first people we serve are all the team members here. And we're very lucky to have an incredible team of experts, which, you know, I think that that's so critical for any business that wants to grow is having the right culture, having the right values, having the right team around you. And these are all things that you've been talking about emphasizing. And really, you know, it seems to be overlooked a lot.
It is.
Especially
it is.
In legal practice.
Yeah, in legal practice, most people join Pilma, to be honest with you, 90% that join Pilma to start with, they join because they want more cases. And we got this guarantee that if you don't grow your practice 25% the first year, you know, you get a whole another year of free.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and but then once they get in it and they do grow, then they start seeing other issues, and then they're wanting help with, you know, how am I going to manage all this? You know, I mean, look at this. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's getting too big. I can't handle it. And that's when you got to have the processes, the systems, the software, what reports, the KPIs. You know, you got to be looking at the right numbers and things like that. You got to watch your cash flow. I mean, you know, I do a whole teaching on nothing but cash flow and how to increase it without borrowing money, you know, but that's a whole other deal. Like I said, I told you the other day when I was doing your stuff, I could talk about this stuff for hours over hours. I just love it. You know, you can tell. I mean, I do.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's, you know, typically drives a good business is someone that at the top who loves what they do. I wanted to ask you something because I heard you talk about this, and I think you talked about there being three different phases of legal marketing. And I was curious if you could talk about what they are and which phase law firms typically do the poorest job at.
Yeah. So in my book, Under Promise, Over Deliver, what I say is like there's three phases of marketing. Before representation, which is what all lawyers try to do with the ads and the different things. And then during representation, you should be really working on your clients there and giving them great service so that they're going to refer you people, you know, and giving top quality service and all this, and turn them into raving fans. Probably 50% of law firms do that, okay? But then the third phase is after representation. And here's where I'd say 80 to 90% of law firms fail. They just assume because they did a great job and they're heroes that these people will just refer them cases. And that's just not true. And it takes more than just asking for it. You got to say top of mind awareness. And then things like newsletters, birthday cards, greeting cards. You know, I do this thing called the client advisory board. I do a thing called the client appreciation festival. I used to do so many things to really stay in front of those people, and give them and teach them. You can teach them how to get you referrals and do it in such a way that it's not even you asking for it. They're doing it because they want to help a friend. If you're a good lawyer, then they need to help their friends that are in trouble or been hurt or injured or whatever. And what better way than to refer you who did a great job, right? But it's just, you know, like I do the books. I'm big on educational marketing. I do these consumer books. I give every client two or three books at the beginning, at the end of representation. You see somebody that's been hurt or injured, give them this book and tell them, this is a lawyer I use. You know, I want to give them a call. That's a great way. That's an icebreaker. Makes it so easy, right? But that's where I see most lawyers, you know, I think it's the ego or it's just laziness. I'm not sure. But that's where they're losing a lot of business they could be getting. And they just, but people don't remember. I mean, they don't. It's too fast. I mean, they might remember what you look like. They might remember where your office is. But if you moved offices, you know, they ain't going to remember. I mean, you know, it's very seldom. I mean, maybe 20% do, but 80% don't. They just don't.
So last question, and I've asked every guest I've had on this same question, a little bit of a unique twist for you, because, you know, you've got this incredible experience as a trial lawyer in selling to law firms, which is, you know, unique, but then you've also worked with a ton of successful law firms through Pilma. I'm curious, you know, what would be one tip that you would give other trial lawyers that you believe is part of the secret to success or an important part in terms of the personal injury law practice and growing it based on all of that? Because you're unique and you've got a much different perspective, I think.
Yeah. Well, I could, there's two things. I know you asked for one, but I'm going to give you two because one of them is really more related just to trial and the other is related really to the business. But, you know, my big deal was I had this sign hanging over my, those who fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So my big deal was we look at every case like it's going to trial and work it up like that. And I think you'll be very successful in the, you know, because the best trial lawyers I've seen, they know their case better than anybody else. The defense lawyer, the judge, the jury, they know it better than anybody else. And how do you do that? Preparation. That's it. But the other thing is the key to success in any business is focus and discipline. Focus at one thing at a time and have the discipline not to get carried off or distracted, you know, stay focused, you know, and carry it through.
I mean, that's increasingly difficult with the barrage of stuff that we get every day, but you know, it is incredibly important, as you said, to have that be part of your skill set if you're going to run a successful business.
Well, think about it this way. I'll leave you on this note. I'd rather have one good idea that gets implemented than 20 damn good ideas that nothing ever happened. Does that make sense?
Amen. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. That is absolutely positively incredible advice to anybody, because it really is. There's so many things you could do, but what matters is what you actually do and what you actually implement in your business, whether it's the practice of law or a company like ours. So, well, I'm sure that people that listen to this or watch it are going to want to get in touch with you to get some of this wisdom. How's the best way to get in touch with you?
Just info at pilma.org. That's PILMMA.org. That's really the best way to get up with me. Find out more about Pilma. Like I said, as I told you, everything I do is a 100% guarantee, because I just don't believe in taking people's money unless I can help them. I mean, I'm just really... So people call me crazy, but it works for me. You know what I'm saying? And I think there's so many vendors out there hitting lawyers up all the time, and they want them to sign long-term contracts, and they promise them the moon, but they won't put a guarantee behind it. And that's why I said, you know, I'll put a guarantee behind it. You know, why not? Because, you know, I don't want no bad publicity, you know, because it could even be their fault, but it don't matter. Right, because the client's always right. So I'm good with it. Yep. I'm good with it. I mean, I'm good
with it. Yeah, we're the same. You know, we don't charge a fee, for example, on our lien resolution unless we get a reduction. It's you know, yep. We want to be additive. We want to make that person's life better. We certainly don't want to be a cost or expense on a file when really we can help that person net out more dollars. So I completely buy into that methodology and ideology. Well, Ken, thanks for being a guest. We'll link to Pilma in the show notes, and you know, hopefully, people can reach out to you through that through the website or through the info email address, and again get some of that wisdom. Thanks again for being a guest today, and we'll see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer Review.
All right, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Trial Lawyer Review. You can find more at triallawyerreview.com and look for more episodes and more content coming in the future.